this investigation. Very often you don't know who's perpetrator. You're taking the DNA to find out later.
No,
Just a moment, counsel. Sorry, counsel. Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Mike Elston. I represent the United States Postal Service in this matter. With me at counsel table is Andrew German from the Postal Service, and I've asked to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This case is
witnessed. We don't pay much attention to those.
I understand. The Postal Service brought this petition for review because this case is important to the Postal Service. And the reason it's important to the Postal Service is that it will determine who has the primary role in setting the rates for first-class mail, whether it's the Postal Regulatory Commission or the Postal Service itself. Right now, it's not the Postal Service. That's in contrast to what the PAEA, the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006, intended. The PAEA changed the Postal Rate Commission from a rate-setting body to a price-regulating body, as well as changing the name from a rate commission to a regulatory commission. The hallmark of the new regime that was to be regulated by the PRC was pricing flexibility for the Postal Service subject to an inflation cap. Even the PRC has said that pricing flexibility was the principal goal of the PAEA and central to congressional design. But by attempting to rewrite a provision of the law regarding work-sharing discounts and ignoring another part of the law, the PRC is engaged in what I can only describe as a bold attempt to regain its primacy in the price-setting process without even attempting to justify that move with reference to the goals and objectives of the PAEA. Your Honors have ordered that I be prepared to address standing, and I'm prepared to address standing.
Oh, ripeness.
Ripeness. Ripeness and standing. And
standing is... Skip to ripeness. It's all right with my colleagues. Come to ripeness.
That's fine. I'll give you the short answer, but I think it's best in some ways to discuss that in context with our argument regarding why it's inappropriate to link two separate products in a work-sharing relationship. But the short answer as to why the case is ripe is that in a price cap regime, which is the regime that the Postal Service operates under, profit maximization, which is what we're supposed to be doing, making sure that we are able to cover costs and generate profit or what we call contribution toward institutional costs, it requires us to have pricing flexibility. Right now, our pricing flexibility is substantially limited by Order 536, and thus we're suffering a present injury. The order does not allow us, it retains the notion that we're in a work-sharing relationship between these two key products of the Postal Service, single-piece first-class mail and pre-sort first-class mail. And while those two products are tied, and while we are prohibited from exceeding the current levels of pass-through, the discount pass-through, those two products are tied, and we can't do rate design in a rational way. Specifically,
Counsel, if I understood the order that you're petitioning from, or appealing from, it was simply an analytical guideline. It has no bite.
Well,
it hasn't told you specifically. You haven't proposed a rate, and you haven't been told you can't do that rate. It's just an almost tentative approach.
I understand how you could read it that way, Your Honor, but in point of fact, what the Postal Regulatory Commission did in its order was declare our current rates essentially illegal, contrary to law.
I didn't see that.
They've said that we have to stick to that the pass-through is exceeds 100%, and that is not appropriate. And as a
did they give you an order saying you can't charge those rates?
No, the specific order was that we were not obligated to reduce our pre-sort first-class mail discounts below their current levels. They said it twice, that we are not obligated
to
reduce it below our current level.
That says you're not obligated. That doesn't tell you you have to do anything.
It does not allow us to increase the pass-through beyond our current level.
Have you tried?
Well, we have. In fact, we looked at in April 2011, and this is described in some detail at pages 41 through 44 of our brief. We went through a process of designing rates to take advantage of the inflation
cap.
Counsel,
if somebody says you're not obligated to do X, why is that a order that imposes some restraint on you?
Because we are still obligated to do Y. We are still obligated.
Is that what they said?
It is the implication of the
order. But we haven't said it.
I think it's fairly clear that the commission has decreed that we may not go over our current pass-through. And that's the way the Postal Service has interpreted the provision or the order.
Well, I'm troubled about that because I haven't seen a flat order on that.
Well, the law requires us to not exceed 100%. That's what the law requires in terms of the work share discount. We are, under the PRC's current interpretation of things, exceeding 100%, somewhere around 125%. And that's what this rulemaking is about, is how we deal with that issue. And what the Postal Regulatory Commission said is, look, we're not going to make you reduce it, but by golly, these two products are still in a work-sharing relationship, and while we're not going to make you reduce it, we're going to start doing some more rulemaking.
Part of the problem with 120% calculation is we don't know what the base is either.
And hasn't the commission said that they're not going to require adjustments until after they figure the base, after the next rulemaking? So right now, right. My impression was it's status quo.
Exactly. Yeah. And the status quo has an impact on us now.
I see. You want to change the status quo right now.
We already had an opportunity to change the status quo in designing rates for 2011. We did not raise the price of the first class stamp, principally because in order to raise the price of the first class stamp and keep the pass-through at current levels, we would have also had to raise the price of the pre-sort first class mail. And raising the price of both the first class stamp and pre-sort mail would have eaten up the vast majority of our very small inflation.
You propose such a price increase.
We don't propose price increases. We set prices now.
Okay, so if you'd set the price increase.
If we set the price increase, we would have run afoul of this order.
You think?
What would have happened then? I think that's what we're getting to. What would have happened then? You set the price. You see it as being afoul of that order. What happens then?
Well, I think that a complaint could be filed by somebody, and that could be, and then certainly in the annual compliance report this year, when we report our prices and those kinds of things, there would be commenters, and they'd say what we had done was.
Would that be the time to seek the court's assistance rather than now? That's the ripeness that an element of the ripeness that we're concerned about is the fitness of this for review when there's not yet an actual on-the-ground decision that's affecting the primary conduct of anybody.
Right. Well, I beg to differ with you that characterization because it certainly has affected our conduct. We feel very much constrained to not increase the rate of the pass-through, and that has affected our rate design. It's affected the prices of our two principal products, first-class, single-piece first-class mail and pre-sort first-class mail.
And even though they have told you not to roll back, I'm not sure what it is we're reviewing exactly without a more concrete conflict between your position and theirs.
Well, the position.
We don't know the base yet. We don't know what rate it is you're.
The conflict is very clear, and the follow-on rulemaking won't change this. Mm-hmm. These are two separate products, and they're two separate products not because the Postal Service has said they're two separate products, but because the Postal Regulatory Commission has said they're two separate products.
We know your argument on
right. That.
And it's now, part of the problem you face is that you're obliged to, if I'm not correct, am I correct, you're obliged to bring a petition for review within a certain number of days in the D.C. Circuit?
30 days, Your Honor.
So you had to. Now, we face that problem all the time, and we have a case in which a regulated party is obliged under statute to proceed for petition review within a short period of time, and we think it's not ripe. Your position, we deal with that by order, and your position is preserved in the future when and if there is what we think would be a concrete controversy.
You're covered.
I understand that, and if that's the way the court goes, that's certainly an option. But it doesn't help the Postal Service's present problem, which is we cannot raise the price. We could not raise the price of a first-class stamp
as
long as these are linked.
You think you cannot?
I,
You're not sure.
I think it's fairly clear. If the Postal Regulatory Commission had said this, if they had said what you said in your order directing us to address ripeness, you said that the PRC decided not to require adjustment of first class bulk mates to comply with 39 U.S.C. 3622E. If they said you don't have to comply with 3622E at all between now and the end of the follow-on rulemaking, fine, great, we do that. But that's not what they said. They said that we're not obligated to reduce the discount below its current level. That is in no way permission from the Postal Regulatory Commission to increase the discount above its current level. And that's what we would have had to have done in order to raise the price of the stamp from 44 cents to 45 cents in April. And that's a present injury to the Postal Service. We're constrained because we're not allowed to increase the discount beyond its current level because it would be both contrary to the statute and the PRC's order.
If I understood you correctly, if you attempted to do so, that would trigger proceedings, or potentially would trigger proceedings.
It certainly could.
It could. That's
the troublesome verb for
but
you.
There is one proceeding that will happen, and that is the annual compliance report. The Postal Service is obligated to file an annual compliance report at the end of the year, and then the Postal Regulatory Commission looks at that and issues an annual compliance determination. That is an annual proceeding.
And you get review of that?
Yes. In fact, yes. We filed a petition for review on last year's annual compliance determination. Yeah. But again, it is while this is going on, the Postal Service is losing $10 billion a year and not able to set its prices in a way that maximizes
profit. You're messing with my hypothetical now. My hypothetical was that you did go ahead and change the rates.
I understand.
Right. So you're not losing $10 billion a year under the hypothetical.
Well, we're still probably losing a lot of money, but the point is that I think that the Postal Regulatory Commission in the structure is their orders are entitled to some amount of respect, and I think that they would there are some prudential reasons why it wouldn't be in the Postal Service's best interest to go ahead and blatantly ignore what the commission has said, and I think that that.
Suppose you just ignore it rather than blatant.
I think that we would be in a similar position to the law enforcement officers in the Camretta case, which was a standing case that was decided by the Supreme Court last year. Its facts are totally different, but the idea is a little bit analogous. In that case, the Ninth Circuit had issued a prospective Fourth Amendment ruling, but let the police officers out of liability. It was a individual liability case on the ground of qualified immunity. But the Supreme Court went ahead and took the case. They didn't say it wasn't ripe. They said that prospective ruling of the Fourth Circuit.
Let me go back to Judge Santel's hypothetical, Chief Judge Santel's hypothetical. And if you were to go ahead and raise rates, what would be your argument before the commission as to why the statute permits you to do that?
Our argument before the commission would be that the two products are not in a work-sharing relationship and cannot be in a work-sharing mm-hmm. relationship, and therefore the 100% pass-through limitation of the statute does not apply.
Okay, so what's wrong with pursuing that court of action?
The commission has already decided that question in this order. In Order 536, the commission has said, no, Postal Service, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. These two products are in a work-sharing relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, if they turned out to have a base that was sympathetic to your position, you could end up with the same money charge, right? Even though they have that product notion. In other words, these issues are interrelated. And you could make a proposal for a rate increase, and they could say, well, we disagree with you on the product definition. However, we agree with you that the rate is legitimate because of the base calculation.
I don't think so. And
well, you don't know.
I'm pretty sure that the answer is no. Because
yeah, I'm pretty sure it ain't good enough. You mean really but that's to have not a concrete controversy, you have to know whether somebody, the order has a direct effect.
The issue isn't whether the PRC can get us the same amount of revenue somewhere down the line. The issue is whether the Postal Service has the flexibility and the authority to maximize its profits and set its rates in a way that it sees fit.
Yeah. That's not going to get you there.
I think it's fairly clear that under this order, our flexibility has been limited, and as a result, we are not able to do what the PAEA intended for us to do, which is, within a price cap regime, to set prices to maximize profit. The fact is that pre-sort first-class mail is more profitable to us than first-class mail. We need the flexibility to set that price based on the market conditions, the demand, and its cost structure separately and independent from first-class mail.
That's your argument, and it's a pretty rational argument. It was a very rational argument. The question is whether it's ripe for our review yet.
Nothing in the follow-on rulemaking is going to change that. The Postal Regulatory Commission has decided that issue.
Have we ever concluded that something was ripe just because an entity alleged that its freedom to make future decisions was hampered?
I think that's actually what the Supreme Court decided in Camretta. They said the prospective Fourth Amendment ruling was affecting how law enforcement officers did their jobs in the entire Ninth Circuit, and that was a sufficient hook for the Supreme Court to address the Fourth Amendment issue. And that's this case here. We are
that case that had an immediate bite. There was a direct order. What you said was interesting, counsel. You said we could review this because you can identify the legal issue. But courts are not in the business of deciding legal issues, only in the context of a case in controversy. You can't isolate a legal issue and say, we want you to decide this legal issue, because then you'd be asking us to give an advisory opinion.
Yeah.
Respectfully, Judge, that's not what I said. I was answering a different question. What I've said here is that the Postal Service is harmed by this decision. Specifically, setting aside all the things I've already said and getting to the bottom line, we were constrained from raising the price of the first-class stamp from 44 cents to 45 cents by this order.
Because of
that's a harm.
Financial reasons you said earlier, because you don't want to clash with the regulatory body.
I think those concerns are there, and I mentioned them, but we believe that this order, which says the commission will not require you to reduce the discount below its current level, the clear implication of that language is that, but we're not going to allow you to increase it above the current level.
I don't know if that's a necessary implication at all.
Well, nobody in the Postal Service read it that way, and, Your Honor, nobody at the Postal Regulatory Commission read it that way, because they didn't make the arguments you're making.
Well, that's true, but ripeness is an issue for the court.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We noticed that they didn't make that argument. That's why we asked for people to be prepared to address ripeness.
And I think that the Postal Regulatory...
They made an analogous argument on standing at the end of their brief.
Right.
Analogous argument.
And again,
and standing and ripeness tend to interrelate.
Yeah.
They do. And statutory standing in this case talks about being aggrieved. And I think that we've made it very clear that we're at least aggrieved in terms of statutory standing.
I'm not nearly as concerned about standing as I am ripeness. And they certainly bleed into each other in a lot of cases, including this one.
Right. If you can get the Postal Regulatory Commission today say that we need not comply with 3622E at all,
then you'll never have ripeness.
Until that's true.
That would be a way to defeat your case altogether.
Well, but if we've got that flexibility, Your Honor, I'll count it as a win. I know I've used up all my time, but I hope that I'll be able to use some time for rebuttal.
We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Attorney Counsel, I thought that was a very clever ending.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I'd like to put this ripeness issue, just lay some backdrop and some context, because I think it will be helpful for the court's consideration. Analytical principles is a term of art, and the Postal Regulatory Commission's regulations require that the Postal Service's submissions to the commission comply with those analytical principles unless they've been altered. So they're sort of the scheme under which the Postal Service is required to operate. Now, the rate setting that takes place, the Postal Service has when it wants to change its rates, which it typically does roughly every year, it submits those proposed rates to the Postal Regulatory Commission for a 45-day review, primarily designed to ensure compliance with the cap. And then the rates take effect after those 45 days. And then at the end of the year, at the annual compliance review, the commission does a more comprehensive review on a less expedited basis. Our understanding of the ripeness issue here is similar to my colleagues, but the question really is whether the Postal Service should be put to the choice of putting in rates that would not treat the interaction between pre-sort and single-piece first-class mail as a work-sharing discount, And then there would be a 45-day review, and even if it survived that 45-day review, then at the end of the year, the analytical principles that the commission established would say that those rates were improper, and then the Postal Service might be, or not just might, but would likely be put in a position of having to readjust rates or possibly make different plans for the future. And in terms of ripeness, which is a prudential doctrine, it didn't seem to us that the Postal Service should be required to set rates in contradiction to the analytical principles.
But, counsel, we won't know whether the rates are appropriate or inappropriate without knowing what the base calculation is. Isn't that correct? Even assuming you're right with respect to your definition of product.
Well, there's a short-term question and a long-term question. Before a new base is established, as was described earlier, there was sort of we're going to maintain the status quo. Now, my colleague just said, and this was our understanding from their brief as well, that the Postal Service would like to increase the size of the discount beyond its current level. And nothing in the commission's order gives them authorization to do that.
But nothing in the order precludes it either.
Well, the order doesn't specifically preclude it, but the commission's interpretation of the statute, as governed by analytical principles that the commission has set out, says that
it depends on what the base is. You could set the base in such a fashion as to give them much more flexibility than they would otherwise have.
Right, and at the time that a new base is set, that will be used as the guidepost for this. But I don't read anything in the commission's order to suggest that until we come up with a new base group, you can do whatever you want, which seems to be the...
Wait a minute, counsel. It's not whether you can do whatever you want. The question is whether there's a charge that will be illegal or not. And, you know, we have to be able to express this in terms of dollars and cents, money. And you can't do so in this present case.
Well, my understanding is that what the Postal Service wants to do is increase the size of the disparity between the charge for single-piece mail and the charge for pre-sort mail beyond what it is now. And it wants to do so not by saying, and we think, you know, there's a different base group and that it's justified on that basis.
But if they do, they could get to the same place. They could get to the same dollars and cents.
I'm not sure in their April of this past year thing they could have done so, right? Because the disparity is what it is now. The commission said we still think the work share thing applies, and the Postal Service wants to say no, we want to increase the disparity and make it bigger. Obviously,
still trying to see, you know what? I picked up the briefs in this case and I had a heck of a time figuring out what was going on. Because there's no indication of what the Postal Service wanted to charge and why you think that's inappropriate. Because there's no dollars and cents in this, in the entire brief.
Which
is an indication, of course, there's no concrete controversy. I know everybody would like an advisory ruling on this so that everybody knows what they might be able to do with the legal concepts. But we cannot see, I don't see a concrete controversy.
Well, it's an unusual factual setting, but the regulatory regime contemplates that the commission will set analytical principles, and then the Postal Service is supposed to, unless those analytical principles have been changed, comply with the existing analytical principles. And the Postal Service wants to do something which they concede would contradict the analytical principles, because they don't want to justify this as a work share discount. They want to say these are two different...
Counsel, suppose they come up with a charge for pre-sort mail, and you conclude that because of the base calculation is perfectly legal, even though they got there through an analytical process that you don't like.
Ultimately, that could happen. But right now, if they wanted to set rates before the new base has been established, then and they didn't want to do it by arguing that there was any base that would make this appropriate, I'm not sure they would have the flexibility to do this.
How many times did you have if in that last sentence?
Before the I'm not sure.
Yeah, before the I'm not sure. You had about three ifs in there. Does that sound like a case that's ripe?
I I mean, if this court thinks it needs more information to resolve this dispute, you know, that's for the court to decide. I would also just note, as I think my colleague did, that you know, one of the questions in the rightness inquiry is whether it's a legal issue or whether it turns on the particular facts. Certainly, at least.
Well, you just said that it could turn on the fact. When you said ultimately that could happen to yeah. Judge Silverman's hypothetical, it's fact bound.
Well, if you look at the actual points that the Postal Service is raising. The first argument on this point is that if there are two different products, then they don't have to apply the workshare discount provision at all. Now, that is a legal question. We submit that that is an inappropriate reading of the Act because the workshare discount provision doesn't allude to products, doesn't say anything.
And you want an advisory opinion on that.
Well, it's not an advisory opinion. The Commission has issued analytical principles, which in this context have the force essentially of a regulation, saying that Postal Service, when you are designing your rate, when you are submitting your rates to us and submitting your materials justifying those rates, you have to do it with due respect to those analytical principles. They're required to do that by regulation.
But didn't you just concede that they could go through that process, use different analytical principles, and end up with a rate that's acceptable? I thought that's what you conceded.
They're within their rights to ignore the analytical principles. There may be a rate out there somewhere that they could want to set that would be consistent with the analytical principles, but
not following those principles. They could ignore those principles and end up with a rate that's acceptable. Isn't that right? I thought you when you said ultimately it could end up that way. I thought that's.
I apologize for my confusion, but ultimately at the end of the day they have to have rates that are justified based on the analytical principles that the Commission has set out. Now, it may happen that
Excuse me, counsel, let me interrupt you for a second. Here's a classic case we have. Let's say the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, comes up with an order setting rates. And a regulated company petitions for review on the grounds that the analytical principles set forth in the FERC order are illegal and wrong. However, they do not challenge the rate calculation. Would we have jurisdiction under that case?
I don't think you would, but I don't think this is. But
that's
let me explain.
Exactly the problem that might be true in this case. You see? And in fact, we have held in such a case we don't have jurisdiction.
Well, I'm thinking the analogy.
So that could happen in your case, in which case the Postal Service would say, "Damn it, we've had to adjust our calculations in order to get to the same place by using a different base."
I think a closer analogy to the FERC case that you've described would be a case in which the entity submitted a rate and FERC said, we think that rate is not permissible.
Exactly. If they say the rate is not permissible, then we have a concrete controversy.
And then they say but we need to figure out what the appropriate rate is going to be. We know it's going to be different from this. And so in the interim, we're going to allow you to continue to have your current rate. And that's sort of what happened here. But then the additional step is that the Postal Service doesn't just want to comply with the rate that was already in place, but they want to change it again in a way that's different from FERC's analytical principles. And that's what's happening here. And it's a complicated scenario, but you know, that's our understanding of what's happening. If this court thinks that there are more facts that are needed, obviously this court, you know, has discretion to say that the case isn't right. But if I could just turn quickly to the merits, because I think that will illustrate the way in which this court could resolve at least some or all of the disputes here. On the question of the product definition, the Postal Service's view is that only if two types of mail are the same product does the workshare discount provision apply. Now, it can't rely on the language of the workshare discount provision for that proposition because the word product isn't in there. Basically, and the definition of the word product is very broad, and it says if there are cost or market differences, two items can be separate products. So the existence of the workshare discount itself could justify making two items separate products. So the Postal Service could come in and say, these two products are different. One of them is cheaper than the other, and therefore we want them to be different products. And then they would turn around and say, and since the workshare discount provision only applies within products, you know, we're done.
All of these may not have ifs in them, they got coulds in them. We're still dealing with hypotheticals rather than right facts, aren't we, counsel?
Well, the Postal
Service. What could happen?
Well, the Postal Service.
We don't review what could happen.
Well, what you're reviewing is the Postal Service is saying that they are entitled to do something, namely increase the price of single piece mail without a similar increase in pre-sort. And the Commission has told them that the binding analytical principles, binding on the Postal Service, which they're supposed to comply with, the Commission has told them that that's what that they're not permitted to do that. And having a regulated entity that says, I want to do something, but you've told me that I can't, is a classic case that this court would resolve. Just on the merits of the other...
Binding analytical principles are not what we would normally review. We would never... I can't think of a case where we would review binding analytical principles disassociated from a concrete order.
Well, I don't know if the issue is that they're called analytical principles. I mean,
It might be that in a rulemaking...
Yeah. That's right.
We would have that situation. Is this a rulemaking here? I grant you, in a rulemaking, we do get to that point at times.
Although sometimes we say it's not ripe if we can't visualize the application.
It certainly, I'm satisfied it gets them standing, but by analogy to rulemaking, it's very much the same thing, but does it get ripeness?
I mean, your question was whether this is a rulemaking, putting sort of the formalism of it aside. As a practical matter, this is, in effect, a rulemaking. The docket number is RM something or other, which suggests
that that would get them standing. But I'm not sure that it gets as far as ripeness, because we have, at times in rulemaking, reviews said precisely what Judge Simmons suggests, that we need to see how this works on concrete facts. So.
And this court could do that, and the reason I wanted to discuss the merits in addition to setting out our position, although it's in the briefs, is to show that there aren't really concrete facts that this court is awaiting in order to resolve this. The Postal Service's view, and just turning to the second issue, the Postal Service's view really turns on the difference between pre-sort and first and single piece mail, saying that pre-sort is different essentially because it's pre-sorted. It's sort of a version of their product argument, but they're saying, and the intervener sort of joins them together even more specifically, but they're essentially saying pre-sort and single piece are different because pre-sort, you know, the group of people who are attracted to this are the people for whom it's worth it to pre-sort, and the single piece people are people who are attracted to it because it's not worth it to pre-sort. And that is exactly what the workshare discount is about. And the text of the statute, of course, applies to rate discounts provided to mailers for pre-sorting. And that's precisely what this is. And so those two issues, we submit, could be resolved on this record because they're ripe for review. But obviously, if this court, you know, concludes that it needs more facts, you know, that's for this court to decide. Unless there are further questions.
We've got you to the end of your time now, I think. Well, that's 9 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give petitioner back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I find myself in the odd position of agreeing with much of what Mr. Tenney said.
I thought that was odd, too, but give me go ahead.
This is an order of the PRC. We feel they feel like we have to comply with it. We feel like we have to comply with it, and that's what we've been doing. I do need to correct one thing that I said. I missed a step when you asked me what would happen if we set rates that were not consistent with these analytical principles. There's a process that where the PRC reviews it. It's a short process, and they have said in previous orders that they do two things. They make sure that the rates are consistent with the price cap, and they make sure that the workshare discounts are consistent with the workshare provision in the PAEA. If they find that they're not, which if we had raised the price of the first class stamp to 45%, 45 cents, they would not have been, they would have returned those rates to us.
Suppose you were to take action and they would conclude in an opinion the rates and the workshare discount which the Postal Service has constructed are okay although the analytical framework they used is incorrect. Do we have review?
In the context of the way this actually works, I think the answer might be no, and that's what I was getting to. When the postal, when the PRC returns the rates to us and says you're not in compliance, we have to redesign the rate system. And that particular returning of the rates to us is not a final order of the commission. At least that's my understanding. And as a result, it's not appealable. So we get the rates back, and then we have two choices. We can either design it in a different way that complies with what the PRC has said, or we can implement the rates. The problem with implementing the rates is we're probably opening ourselves up to a claim that we're acting ultra vires. And, we can't go back and give everybody a refund after we...
They don't disapprove the rates. They disapprove your analytical framework. They say you could get there through the appropriate approach, and so the rates are okay. But we don't agree with your analytical framework.
I disagree with that. I think there's a practical reality when you take into consideration...
Suppose they did do that.
We could not design rates that comply with their framework and the price cap.
What could happen is if there was a different calculation of the base...
Your Honor, they could calculate that they could put as many different things that they want to call ancillary work share characteristics. They can put all those things in there, and it's not going to change the fact that there are different cost characteristics above and beyond those. The pre-sort first class mail and single piece weigh different things on average. They travel different distances. There are cost characteristics that are totally different.
You're suggesting the denominator could be a disagreement, but there could be an agreement on the numerator. Do you understand what I mean by the calculation? In other words, there are two parts of this equation, and we don't know yet how both parts would go.
Well, I mean, we know what the price of a single-piece first-class letter is. It's 44 cents. That is in the precise context of this case, that is the base rate. And then the work-shared variant is supposed to be the difference between the base rate and costs avoided by work sharing.
We don't know what the base rates are now.
Well, I mean, it's 44 cents.
No, in the calculation, we don't know what the base rate would be.
We don't know what, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by base rate.
Benchmark.
Excuse me, I shouldn't use base rate, I use a benchmark.
The benchmark is 44 cents. First-class mail is 44 cents. Single-piece first-class mail is 44 cents.
Perhaps I misunderstood the briefs. I understood the benchmark wasn't calculated yet.
They are going to...
You're wanting to go up.
Let me step back for a second and say what they've said they're going to do is they're going to find some subset of first-class mail that could serve as a benchmark. The Postal Service rejects the idea that additional rulemaking and regulation by the PRC is going to give us pricing flexibility. It's not going to happen. But
How do you know that?
long history of this, and every rule that we have to comply with decreases our flexibility. If we run up against a hard and fast rule, we have less flexibility. I'm fairly certain about that as a matter of common sense. But the rate, whatever type of first-class mail the PRC would pick as its benchmark, the rate is 44 cents. That's what it is. There is no differentiation between single-piece first-class mail they've talked about metered mail or IBI information-based indicia mail. It's all 44 cents. So the rate is 44 cents. Let me just...
The question is what the discount will be.
Correct. And right now, under the current, without applying these analytical principles, we are at 125%, way over. Even if you include additional things in the calculation of the discount, we're still going to be over. And it's also not going to account for the 5 cents greater contribution that pre-sort first-class mail makes to us.
That brings us back to the question from a while ago. Assuming you attempt to employ a rate that is way over, what happens then?
Presumably, they will return the rate to us, and we won't be able to appeal it, and we'll be forced.
Why will you not be able to appeal it?
Because the commission does not consider that to be a final order, and I think under 3622, you have the jurisdiction to review final orders by a group.
Here,
There is. This rulemaking...
Is that order to be more final than this one is?
In an existential...
Forget whether they consider it to be a final order or not.
Sure.
Wouldn't that such an order be more final than this one is?
From our perspective, it would be a problem for us because we would be put in a very difficult situation.
I know. It's a problem for everybody.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be more final than this one is? This one does not say yes or no on any rate. That one would say yes or no on a rate. Why is it less final than this order is?
Judge Santel, the issue is not solely about dollars and cents here. The issue is about how we go forward and how we design rates. And they consider their order to be final. They've terminated the rulemaking proceeding. The follow-on rulemaking proceeding will have a completely different number in their world. It will be a completely different proceeding. This proceeding is terminated. They've made their decision. And as you've heard from the PRC itself, they expect us to comply with it. They expect us not to raise our pass-through, which we think we shouldn't even have to justify the difference between pre-sort and single piece in the context of the work-sharing rule. But they've told you right here today that they don't want us to go above that. It's fairly concrete from our perspective and what we have to do, and it's affecting the way we're making decisions right now.
You're taking you way past your time now, unless my colleagues have further questions. The case will be submitted, and you can give us a recess, Madam Clerk.
Thank you.